Hello and welcome to the Nine or Nine podcast. This is episode 230 of the Nine or Nine podcast. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the fandom around Taylor Swift, which is something that I find so fascinating, particularly the massive surge in popularity in the last 3 or 4 years. Taylor has become big business. She is the biggest artist in the world. A few years ago, Taylor couldn't sell out 2 dates in Croke Park in 2018 on her Reputations tour, but her current Eras tour, as we discussed before on the podcast, crashed Ticketmaster and has seen a huge unprecedented demand. Why have people flocked in greater numbers to Taylor Swift ever than before? So with 3 Dublin gigs at the Aviva next summer and the Taylor Swift Eras tour film doing big numbers at the box office at the moment, it felt like the right time to find out more. Andrea is absent this week, so I thought in her absence I'd delve into the lore and fandom of the Swifties through the lens of a community which gathers around Taylor once a month. You may have heard about Swiftageddon, which is a club night that plays Taylor Swift songs all night. Swiftageddon was started by Dave Faubert, a DJ and former journalist who put on his first Swiftageddon in London in 2019, and since then it has grown to a national UK and monthly thing, a constant tour dates, and in the last 2 years, a nationwide Irish event too. Now, Anna Jacob is a resident DJ at the Irish Swiftageddon Club Nights and a pal of mine, and I've been fascinated with the success of this Swiftageddon night as Swifties gather en masse to sold-out venues in Dublin, Cork, Belfast, Galway and Limerick, along with a rake of UK cities to sing their hearts out to Swift classics, new songs, new versions and deep cuts. So let's chat to Anna Jacob about Taylor Swift, fandom, the Swifties and Swiftageddon. So let's set the scene and hear a little bit of what it sounds like when a few hundred fans are singing along to their favourite artist, Taylor Swift. Yeah, so I thought it'd be nice to talk to you about Taylor Swift and Swiftageddon and all the things associated with it, because it's not simply a case of you know, a fan of one artist. I think we've seen fandom kind of grow in a different way over the last 10 or 15 years, a more intense kind of experience for people. But I think the Swiftiedom, the Swifties are something else entirely. There's something going on in that lore that is really interesting to, I think, people who aren't even in it or people who are in it. But I mean, obviously it's a huge community. From your perspective, like, I mean, so you've been DJing at the Swiftageddon nights now for how long?
Yeah, nearly 2 years now. The first one was January 2022. And yeah, kind of when I got the gig, I thought like, oh, this will be a fun sort of one-off, and it just has exploded. I don't think we could have ever predicted how massive it was going to be. I think next month I'm doing my 40th Swiftageddon.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because it's not just, it happens around the country now and you sell out every venue pretty much you're in. It happens in the Grand Social in Dublin. You have Dolan's in Limerick, Empire Music Hall in Belfast, is it?
Yeah.
Cork, where do you do it?
Cypress Avenue,
of course.
Great spot.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And it's just like, it's always full. It's always busy. Yeah. And there's no trail off here. And you've been doing it for this long. So from your side, so when you took on that role as a DJ for like a Taylor Swift night, like how much of a fan were you?
Oh, I was worried you were going to ask me this. I was a fan. Was by no means a full-blown Swiftie. I think, honestly, like the first 3 albums were just totally passed me by. Red was the first album where I just loved the singles, but I didn't really like go and listen to the full album. But I was like, oh, she's great fun. I like Taylor Swift.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, I think 1989 was the first album I probably actually listen to start to finish. But then it was when Folklore came out in 2020 that was like probably my biggest pandemic album. I just had it on repeat. That was the first album that I really fell in love with and was like, oh, okay, yeah, she's something special.
So you came to do your Swiftageddon, your first Swiftageddon. What surprised you about it? I mean, you were a fan, but like then you turn up and all of these other people are there, and what I've seen from the videos is they're absolutely belting out every song.
Yeah, just it's just such a lovely crowd, I think, is the main thing. You know, she's one of these artists where the fans aren't just like a bunch of people who love her music. It's a community, and it's like, you know, there is like a sort of a spiritual element to it. I like to sort of, I don't know, think of artists as being sort of like little mini cult leaders. You know, even on social media, you have followers, you're not fans anymore. And I think when you get to Taylor Swift level, it's like organized religion, and she's God, and Dave, who's the founder of Swiftageddon, he's like the Pope, and I'm like a cardinal. But I think there was a great article in the Irish Times about the Swiftageddon in Dublin. They came along and they interviewed a few people in the crowd, and one of them really went deep on the sort of like religious comparisons, which I thought was great. I think I have it here. Yeah, she said, like, people go to mass every Sunday, quote the Bible. We just quote Taylor Swift to each other. Outside of religion or work, it's really hard to find a community like that. Yeah, it just, that's right. Kind of that's the thing that keeps coming up. People are like, oh, it's like church, it's like a religious experience, it's spiritual, it's like uplifting, and it's about community, and you know, everyone's there together. You know, I've seen like strangers just like holding each other. Yeah. You know, it's
wow.
Really,
so it's like, it really is like replacing religion then. It is replacing like, I mean, that's what we lost, obviously, when people, Irish people especially, stopped going to mass. But yeah. Like communities didn't really, I mean, that's what Taylor Swift is now. She's replacing that. She's giving people the place in which to gather at Swiftageddon every month.
That's it. And I think like after the pandemic, people were so desperate for that. And this was just kind of the perfect version of it for anyone who is a fan of hers. Because, yeah, you're in a room just full of people who feel the same way that you feel about this thing. This the Bible, the 10 albums that are her Bible. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm sure you could write a whole PhD on how, you know, fandom is the religion of the 21st century or whatever. But yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm interested in this because, like, Taylor has exploded in the last few years, like, worldwide, and here especially as well. I mean, she played in Croke Park before, when was that? 2018, I believe. And, like,
oh yeah,
it reputation. Didn't sell out. No. And it was, the second gig wasn't a sellout. And so what has changed that it's gone from not being able to sell out to Croke Park gigs to, like, these insane demand for the Aviva, do you think?
I've never really been one to go to those kind of massive gigs because they're so expensive, and I always feel like musically they're never that satisfying because like stadiums are just so sort of echoey, and I don't normally buy those tickets, so I wouldn't have been that kind of fan at that time. I know quite a few people who got free tickets to that gig.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, that was what happened. But now you cannot get a ticket if you tried hard. So why? No, what's happened? What's changed?
I don't know. I'm sure there's an element of the pandemic making people sort of feel like, you know, I was desperately trying to get tickets, you know, and have been for other gigs like that for the first time in my life, I think. And I think there is a certain amount of us kind of going, well, we might not get this chance again. There might be another 2 years where we can't go to any gigs. So let's go to all the gigs. But I think as well, like on top of the Swifties, there's just so much hype. And I think things always turn, but, and you know, the music press loves to turn on women when they get too big for their boots. But like, I think at the moment she is riding a wave of like lots of people finally copying on to how brilliant she is and going, oh yeah, she's brilliant, you know. So I think a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily have been in Swift land before are now kind of going, oh yeah, I'd be up for that. I'd go to that concert kind of thing, you know. I know a few people who are going who aren't like mega fans. I'm a bit like, give me those tickets.
Yeah. I think that's interesting as well. I was listening to a podcast during the week that was saying one of the reasons why Taylor Swift is more popular than she ever was is because like radio isn't as popular as it was, therefore less reliant on the big hits that she had at the time. So like back, what, 7-8 years ago, whatever it was, the Snake era, whatever you want to call it, you know what I mean? Reputation era. Like it's kind of, the songs are maybe connecting more with people, or they're more direct, they're lyrically more nuanced and, but they're written large. They're like large songs. Like, I mean, she did so much during the pandemic as well. And maybe there's an element of that. It, like, she was trying to court a big pop audience back then, and now she just has an audience and she's made it bigger.
Totally. I think she's stopped caring too much about having those three singles on an album, you know, that kind of thing. She's which is our win, really, you know, like Folklore and Evermore, I think, are just two incredible albums that don't have very obvious singles on them. And I think something really interesting that has come out of DJing at Taylor Swift nights is, you know, a lot of the songs that wouldn't have been my faves on Folklore or Evermore are huge on, you know, at Swiftageddon. I don't know. It's like there are your personal faves and then there are like consensus faves. Yeah. And it's from being in a room with everyone, like screaming the lyrics to songs that I was a bit sort of like meh about, that has kind of brought me around and gone like, oh no, that is a great song. I can't believe I hadn't realized what a great song that was. Which is really interesting. It makes you listen to every song, you know, in a new way. And just going back to your point on you know, the massiveness of the Eras Tour, I think another thing is that Swifties keep coming of age. I think this is hopefully something that will keep Swiftageddon going for a long time. And I'm doing my first under 18s show at the end of this month. And I was at the movie at the weekend, and there were loads of young kids there, like 9-10 year old girls. Which is wonderful, but I think you grow into Taylor Swift, but I don't think you grow out of her. So, you know, I do think her fan base will keep growing.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, babies keep being born.
Yeah. So, like, what do you think? What is the demographic of the Swiftageddon nights then, really?
So, yeah, I'd say probably 75-80% women in there. 20s, early 20s, I'd say. There is like a strong sort of 30 something contingent, but I know, you know, you get to an age where you need a babysitter to have a night out, so I'm sure that sort of hampers that demographic a little bit. Of course, yeah, lots of people from the LGBTQ plus community. And I know she got, I don't know, I remember reading a really snarky article about the video for You Need to Calm Down, which is, you know, I guess would be her sort of gay anthem, you know, being like, she's sort of, I don't know, trying to be this like LGBTQ hero, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, I hate that kind of commentary. Like when you're in a room with like 500 Swifties, like screaming, shade never made anybody less gay, you're like, no, this is only a good thing. Like,
yeah,
screw anyone who's gonna tell us she can't write a big gay anthem. Like, the world needs this, and we all love it. So yeah, and then there are straight men as well. And there's a healthy contingent of like partners and boyfriends who I think are often like sort of reluctant in the beginning, and then by the end of the night they are like having the time of their lives, and like men have said to me, like, this is just like the nicest space I've been in a sort of nightclub situation. You know, everyone is like so kind and respectful, and it's just a great vibe. Last weekend I played a show in Belfast where we had a joint Stag and Hen, and they were the best gang ever, you know. Diehard Swifties, knew every song, dancing to everything. They were absolutely great. So yeah, and I think the net is getting wider as well. Like I think I am seeing more men in the crowd and sort of, yeah, bigger range of ages. And
I read a piece in the New York Times this week by Taffy Brodesser Ackner, mm-hmm. called "My Delirious Trip to the Heart of Sweeptedom," and I really enjoyed it a lot.
Such a good piece of writing. I cried the whole way through it. I was on the train just like, oh, I can't wait to see this concert.
So there, yeah, I want to get into a bit of that because, I mean, that's obviously to come. The big thing is that, like, you know, the gigs are coming next summer, but obviously there's the concert film as well, which is doing, like, stupidly big numbers around the world at the moment. It's currently 100 million in the US, top grossing concert film of all time in North America, and nice. Second biggest October opening of all time, doing really well here, of course, as well. Highest grossing cinema event cinema release in the UK and Ireland. So it's just that, like, absolute, like, people are absolutely gagging for this. And it is that. But I think the New York Times piece, the Taffy Brodesser Ackner piece, talks about how Taylor Swift has gone kind of beyond the traditional interview cycle, like the big megastars, that she's in control. And that's what this journalist has been thinking about. She hasn't done a traditional magazine profile since 2019. She announced this tour in Good Morning America and her own social media accounts. She released two pandemic albums, Folklore and Evermore, but dropped them into the world with a day's notice. And pretty much needed no intermediary to explain it to her audience. And I think for people like myself who, well, not a strict, music critic in the traditional sense of like a Times or a broadsheet newspaper, but like I think a lot of people in that world feel a bit threatened when this kind of stuff kind of passes them by, when they're the middleman is taken out, and like an artist like that is just talking to her fans. Like, she obviously doesn't need to talk to people to promote herself, and she doesn't need to, but she's created this kind of content machine around her that, like, is now poured over by, like, Swifties, like, in terms of, like, secret codes or messages and all this kind of stuff, the cryptic stuff, which is just really, like, really interesting as well. Because, like, I know that's what fandom is now. Fandom is, like, oh, reading things into something that may not be there or not. That's fun. I get it. Mm. I get it. But, like, can you figure out, like, what is it about Taylor Swift that makes people go crazy for it now?
See, I haven't quite gone fully down that rabbit hole.
That's good. That's probably
codes and
good for your health.
Numerology. And yeah, I mean, it goes deep. Like, I'm very entertained by it. I love hearing about it from other people, but I'm never going to be on the Reddit threads or the Tumblr blogs. I'm too old for that, Niall. But yeah, I think I do. So I have some theories about, like, what makes her, you know, why is it that it's Taylor Swift that is, like, the defining artist of our times? And yeah, like, weirdly, this is kind of what my dissertation was about. So I have my undergrad is in popular music, and I wrote about talent programs and the X Factor and the Spice Girls, and, like, what is that, like, magic ingredient that just sort of makes an artist, like, completely take off. But also with, like, longevity and credibility as well. And I think the person I like comparing Taylor with, and there's, like, a bit of facetiousness to this, but also I kind of haven't found as good a contemporary comparison, is Mozart. So I think she's the Mozart of our time.
We need Andrea Cleary here. Sorry. Dissertations and Mozart. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, we'll have to do, like, a part two with Andrea. But yeah, so just in terms of, like, they're both sort of child prodigies, you know, both touring and playing from writing music from a super early age. Both really supported by their families. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, when I was 14, if I'd have been like, right, I'm going to be a singer, a songwriter, I want to be a superstar, I don't think my parents would have relocated to Nashville.
Yeah.
I don't know about yours.
No.
But, you know, I do think it takes a real special, supportive American set of parents to have that kind of belief in their child. Yeah. And it's incredible. And like, I'm a little bit obsessed with her mum. She just, and well, her whole family really, like, for any Swifties listening, like Marjorie, a song about her grandma is like, just one of the most moving songs I think I've ever heard. But like, that's a real special thing about her. And, you know, they still are on tour with her, and you know, her brother is like, I think he runs all her sort of, I think he produces her music videos, or he has like some big role in her sort of business. And yeah, I think the fact that she's a real hard worker, you know, there's a lyric that's, you know, I've never been a natural, or all I do is try. You know, she's said herself that she's, you know, she's worked really hard, and like, and we've seen her sort of struggle vocally over the years, and you know, she's spoken about that, and like, she's definitely at a place now where she's really at the top of her game. Like, her performance is absolutely flawless, and yeah, and it has come from like a major amount of graft. If there was like an X factor, like one thing that makes Taylor sort of really stand out from her generation of pop stars, is I think she is like a dorky nerd at heart, which yeah. You can't really say about a lot of female pop stars. And I think because we've been with her since like her teen years, you know, we've heard all the songs about her being at school, you know, high school romances and stuff. I think consciously or subconsciously, like, all of us have, you know, just maybe had a little daydream about what it would have been like to be in the same class at school as Taylor Swift. And I think the fans all suspect that we'd be best pals. And, you know, and she's got like a sort of Hermione Granger-ness of being a nerd. And you know that she was really trying with her homework and stuff, and that, you know, she was showing up, whereas, you know, maybe some of her contemporaries, we suspect they'd have been around the back of the bike sheds and, you know, would have been the cool kids who wouldn't have looked at you twice kind of thing. But yeah, she just exudes like a warmth and friendliness and, you know, a dorky nerdiness that is just really lovable. Yeah. And this is coming from a dorky nerd. and I think Swiftieden is full of dorky nerds who just, yeah, want to make friendship bracelets for each other. And
like, do you think we really know who Taylor Swift is? Does it matter that we know? Like,
I do, Niall.
I mean, but do you, or is it like, I mean, everyone talks about like, is she's really calculated, or is it like a case of that, you know, she's just another pop star avatar that's created this other thing that people latch on to? Not there's anything wrong with that, but like, do you really know who she is, or do we actually, like, do we? Well, that's why, I mean, is that why people pour over lyrics all the time to try and figure out what's going on with her personal life? Is that it? Like, it's all this.
I mean, I think I'd say you have to be calculated to a certain extent to be a pop star. You know, she's like obviously very smart from in a yeah. business way. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, if you have sort of.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Dived into her songs in the way that I have. You know, you really do get a sense that she, you know, she's very vulnerable, and you do get a sense that she's really let you into every little part of her life and her diary and her heartbreaks and you know, it's just very fun that, you know, she's managed to retain that, like, oh, you know, I've never actually named any of these men that I'm writing about, but we know yeah. who they are. Like, we've put the clues together. It's like, it's very fun. I don't envy her. Like, it must be really hard to be that famous. And she's written about that plenty. Yeah, I mean, I think you give up a lot to reach that level of of fame. Yeah. And but, you know, I do think her personality has always shone through, and I don't know, I've never met her. I don't know if I even want to particularly.
Yeah. But, I guess that's the other thing, the other aspect of it, like the kind of, she is quite big business. You know, she's been described as a capitalist, like a big pop capitalist before. You know, the endless versions of, obviously the versions are a different thing because that's her taking back ownership of her back catalogue because of Scooter Braun. But the kind of many limited edition versions of albums have been criticized before because there's so many of them, and you know, the cost of tickets and all that kind of stuff. It can put a lot of pressure on like families who are, you know, hosting a Swiftie who are like maybe a little bit underage or younger, and they're like, well, I have to get all this stuff, and like, you know, that does create its own different problem as well around fandom.
Yeah, but you could say that about football. You know, if your kid is a Manchester United fan, you're having to spend probably more on match tickets and like kits that change every season. Like, I don't know, that's just, we live in a capitalist society, you just gotta deal with that stuff.
Yeah,
you
know?
I mean, I would absolutely love it if she did a tour after this one where she was like, the tickets are free. And, yeah, you know, if you bought my last album, then you just get a ticket automatically, or, yeah, you know, something like that. But, you know, she's been giving to food banks in all the cities she's played in. Like, she does give to charity, and she, you know, she is known for that. And she never goes on about it, which is great. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean,
we expect her to be perfect, and it's just unrealistic.
No, I think it's just,
she's doing okay.
It is. I mean, I understand that the new show is, you know, probably the most ambitious thing she's ever done. So therefore, you can't really put them on for cheap. And then a lot of what, you know, what the big artists are doing now is having a tier of tickets that are cheaper. But I've definitely seen, like, it's not necessarily her fault and she can't keep her eye on everything, but like,
course,
promoters selling high value tickets for very limited views, the kind of stuff I've seen on TikTok around this, and like people who are just really disappointed and stuff like that. That's not something you could really put the blame on her. But I mean, obviously the Ticketmaster stuff last year was so interesting because only an artist as big as Taylor Swift could really make a change on those things, and it'll be interesting if any does change of it. I wouldn't be too sure that it would, but it certainly means that she is the kind of artist that can make change happen as well if she wants. So I think instigating those kind of cheaper tickets is something that could be done for sure. Just back to this New York profile, I'm just going to read about a bit of it because I just really enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, it's so good.
There's a quote here that says, when she's talking to people at the gig, she says, the era isn't the album you like, it's the one you are. The organizing principle of the Eras Tour is that it is a celebration of Taylor Swift's own eras, how at 33, she has already cycled through so many periods of identity on her public journey from girl to woman. You could watch this concert, you could watch this entire phenomenon through the eyes of the idea that Taylor Swift frees women to celebrate their girlhood, to understand that their womanhood is made up of these micro chapters of change, that we're not different people than we were then, that we shouldn't disavow the earlier versions of ourselves, our earlier eras. I mean, that is, could be considered like marketing speak, but it's not. It's a nice idea, I think, and it's something that you can kind of latch onto, and it makes sense with the show she's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I copy and pasted that exact same quote into my notes here because I thought it was so good and just wrapped up what's great about her so neatly. In terms of like the wave of feminism that we're in at the moment, obviously we're taking one step forward and two steps back a lot of the time, but I think a big sea change that I've noticed culturally in the last 2 years, which you've already referred to in terms of fandom, is just like, you know, as a young woman, and you know, I've spoken to several friends who have the same sort of experience. You know, you love stuff so much when you're like in your teens, and then you're taught to feel ashamed about loving those things, whether it's Taylor Swift or, you know, rom-coms or I don't know, so many aspects of culture. Like, if I can give one plug is to the Sentimental Garbage podcast, which I think has done an amazing job of, sort of re-examining those things that women have been made to feel ashamed for loving over the last few years. But yeah, I think just something snapped a couple of years ago and it's like women just went, fuck you, I love this thing and I won't be made to feel ashamed about it anymore. And I'm going to double down. I'm going to like wear those friendship bracelets up to my armpits. I'm going to book those tickets to the Eras Tour and like, and yeah, I've noticed it massively in myself. Like I've stopped kind of apologizing for, you know, I a couple of years ago, I would have been like, oh yeah, I love Taylor Swift, but you know, like, you know, I would have been a bit like, oh, you know, cheesy stuff, whatever. Whereas now I just have no time for anyone who's going to, you know, if someone's like, oh, she's crap though. I'm like, come on, granddad. Like nobody cares what you think. And I think the key part of that is the fact that she has never felt that shame. Like, obviously I'm sure she has felt shame about things, but like the way that she writes and the way that she is now sort of looking back over her career and those different eras and like celebrating all of those little moments of her girlhood and, you know, heartbreak in her teen years and all that kind of stuff. I think it's just like, but yeah, like she's just the queen of that thing of us going, yeah.
Yeah, it's like unbridled.
That's it, unbridled
excitement and unashamed excitement, really. It's that kind of like, I love this and that's fine and I love it.
Yeah.
And loads of other people love it too.
Proud of
it. So yeah, I think and because the Swift Again has done so well, I've seen a few other, like, not very big ones, but like attempts at like doing other artist nights, like I've seen a Harry Styles one and stuff like that. But I imagine based off like what we're saying here and what we know about like the community around Taylor Swift is it's partly the music, it's partly her as a person, it's partly the symbiology and all the fun stuff that happens around like decoding what she her intentions are and stuff like that as well. But like when it comes to Swift Again, like what else do you see on your nights? Like you talked about some of those songs being the ones that are surprising big hits in a way, but like in terms of interactions and like how people are like interacting with those songs.
Yeah, so I did shout out on Instagram to like ask the Swifties what it is they love about Swift Again to see what they would say. Because obviously I've never got to actually go to one. I'm always stuck on the stage.
You're just a cardinal.
Exactly. I'm just the cardinal. I never get to praise. The commitment, someone has said, which is great. I mean, occasionally you'll see someone who comes in who's maybe come with a friend, or like now and then there's a hen party where you can tell that like the hen and maybe the maid of honor are huge Swifties and the rest of them are just like there for the ride, and that's always a little bit awkward. Yeah, like by the end of the night everyone is just, nobody cares what they look like anymore, they're just like screaming the lyrics into each other's faces. There's no sort of being cool at a Swift Again, doesn't exist. Yeah, someone said it feels like a place I can be myself without any judgment. It's wholesome, no creepy men, someone said, which is a good one.
Yeah.
In fact, like a couple of venues have said to me after the nights, they're like, oh, the crowd is just so lovely. I'm like, how can we get this crowd in more often? And I'm like, just alienate straight men.
Yeah.
No offense. but it is like the straight men who are there are the best straight men. But they I think they really appreciate it as well. I think everyone, you know, it's like the few times I've brought boyfriends to gay bars, which I know you're not really supposed to do, but, you know, they'll always comment like, oh my God, this atmosphere is just so lovely. Like people are being nice to each other and they're chatty and, you know, you never feel like you're going to get groped, like, which is wonderful. Those spaces are really important. And yeah, this is a really nice one. My friend Camelia actually said, it's the club version of what you do while getting ready in your room. which I think is kind of nails it, because it's like no one's watching you. It's like you're in your bedroom, just like singing your heart out with your best pals, except there are 500 of you, or, you know, 3,000 of you if you're at
You're saying there is something that I'm going to read out from that New York Times piece as well. There's a husband sitting close to her, and one of them says, "There's not a lot of sex in this show." They had switched seats, and he was bored by the speak now era. And she says, "That's because it isn't for you," I told him. And I found myself getting angry as I spoke. She wasn't created to please you like the other women pop stars. She created herself to please me. She escaped the machine where women are only allowed to be pop stars if they don't anger or threaten men. This just isn't for you. That's what this entire concert reminded me of. Time I spent in my own teenage bedroom singing songs and pinballing between sexy stripper moves and goofy square dancing. Maybe that's what ears really is. The acknowledgement of girls as people to memorialize, or of who we are and who we were, all existing in the same body, on the same timeline. You are the sluttiest version, your silliest version, your most wholesome, your smartest, your dumb, your saddest, your happiest, all at once.
Yeah. Again, that's one of the quotes that I copied. It's like, it's so perfect. I think it's her being a dorky nerd again, you know, even when she's like got a little sexy moment, she'll like stick her tongue out and like, you know, she's never taking herself too seriously. And we love that about her.
Great. So tell me, when she releases new music, is it like manna from heaven for you? You're like, oh, great, get to play more stuff.
No, if anything, it's
gets harder.
Starting to scare me because, like, most of our nights are about 4 hours, give or take.
Yeah.
Between 3.5 to 4.5 hours. And I run out of time every time. Every time someone will come up to me and be like, oh, you didn't play this song, you didn't play that song. I'm like, I tried. It's just, I have a cut-off point.
What you do as well is you have a second room with requests only. I think only Lou's booting off and does that. Yeah.
Yes. Our Lou Brew, one of my bishops, and my friend Emmett as well. They're on rotation down there. Yes. So that's kind of perfect to have the second room for requests only, because there is stuff that you can't really get away with in the main set. Like, you can get away with anything sort of early on, but like, there's one anecdote where it was a bit of a strange one, because there was this, like I mentioned, the occasional hen party where there's just a couple of them who aren't really as swifty as the others. And the vibe was just a little bit off, and they were right at the front, so kind of right in my eye line. But there was this other gang who like just kept requesting Champagne Problems, which is a very slow piano song if you don't know it. And I was like, it's very slow, but I do love that song. And I try to play as many requests as I possibly can. Belfast last weekend, I had 35 requests and I played 29 of them. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Just for, you know, just as an example. But yeah, so I dropped Champagne Problems. One of the members of this hen party gave me the finger. She just like turned around with both hands, just turned around. Yeah, double finger. And yeah, she looked so pissed off, and then just sort of like, you know, was in a huff for the next 3 minutes. While the rest of the room was like, delighted. Yeah. It's a great song, and it has like some, like, it's a real good sing along kind of song. It's got some really powerful lyrics.
Was she just didn't like the song, or because it was a slow one?
It was a slow one. This is the thing, you've got, you just constantly got to choose between like making one person happy by playing their request and like keeping the whole room happy. And it's a tough balance. Like, you'd think it would be a very easy job.
No, DJ, I mean, actually DJing isn't an easy job.
But, no, it's not.
But DJing one artist all night is a whole different ballgame, because, you know, you do have to keep, and they are all invested and they all know it. But like, what about that question of like making sure like you have, do you do a slow set or do you just like move it around, or what do you usually do?
Well, that's it. Like, I found that, you know, like any DJ set, you want to build to a certain extent, but then there are sort of, there's like building in terms of stuff that's you can really dance to and that's a real bop, and then stuff that people are going to want to scream in each other's faces that might be sort of more slow and emotional, like All Too Well 10-minute version, or Enchanted or something like that. And then there are, I'd say about like 5 or 6 songs that I have as the last song sort of on rotation, that, you know, you've got to finish it on the right note. Should be something that's like not too depressing, but definitely sort of, I like to let people leave in like a calm sort of manner. I don't want to let them like, you know, leaving being too overexcited. Yeah, so I'm kind of, if she releases another full-length album next year, we're just going to have to make the nights longer.
Yeah, you're just going to have to do an all-day or
yes,
somewhere.
I would love to do an all-day. It'd be great fun. I know they do one in London that's 7 hours.
Oh, right. Okay.
Between the Bridges, yeah, which I would love to go to. But even that, I think I was updating my USBs the other day and I think I have 16 hours of music on there. Yeah, I mean, and I never play the same set twice. You know, I can't rest on my laurels. And you know, often when she does a new re-release or releases a new album, I'll play like a, you know, like I did a bunch of sort of Speak Now heavy sets after Speak Now was re-released. And, you know, the end of this month, I'll be doing like a big 1989 period. You know, I try and sort of like follow the feeling in Swift Land. But yeah, you're never going to make it. Everyone happy, but like a lot of them do come to every single Swift again. Like I do see the same faces and I've gotten to know the regulars. So I always say, like, if I didn't play your request tonight, I promise I'll play it next time. Just let me know at the start of the set or DM me beforehand. Don't wait until 10 minutes before the end and be like, oh, can you play like Back to December or something, like real slow. And yeah.
Okay, great. You think your next ones are in November, is that right?
Yeah, back in Dublin in November when we will have
November 11th in Taylor's the Grand version. Social.
Yes.
Dolan's Limerick on November 10th and November 16th, the Empire Music Hall in Belfast. And you did mention you have a playlist of for people who may be skeptical, who are interested. Maybe you're Swiftie curious.
Swift curious, yeah. I mean, I have converted a few people who work in the venues that I play in regularly. Like I have had, you know, maybe lighting people or sound people come up to me afterwards and be like, oh, now I've done, you know, four of these. I've been listening to her at home and, you know, I'm a fan. This is my favorite song, you know. Yeah, it's never too late to become a Swiftie, to get into your Swiftie era. So yeah, I have a playlist that's like Swift for the Skeptics, which is, songs that you probably wouldn't have heard that wouldn't have been singles, but that I think are especially brilliant and that would be sort of, more of the fan faves and, a real like gems of storytelling and songwriting.
Okay, great. Well, we'll maybe share that with the Patreon listeners as well if you want to listen to that. Let us know. We'll put it up on Patreon. Anna, thanks so much. And thanks. Enjoy your, you're continuing Swiftageddon DJ experiences, which sound, you know, always watching the videos that you put up, they're just gas. And they're so much fun because, like, clearly it comes across how much of a, like, safe space it is for the people that are going there and how much fun people are having. And so I think that's something to be celebrated for sure. And long may it continue.
Thank you so much for having me. Cool. It's been really nice.
What's your current favorite Taylor Swift song?
Oh, the song that I would have played at my funeral is The Last Great American Dynasty. I think it's her best kind of storytelling. And there's a lyric. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but there's a lyric that I've promised myself I will have tattooed on me somewhere if I get to 100 Swiftageddons, which at this rate will happen sometime next year. So
okay.
I'll let you know.
All right, Anna Jacob. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me. Bye.
There goes the loudest woman this town has ever seen. I had a marvelous time ruining everything. I had a marvelous time ruining everything. A marvelous time ruining everything. A marvelous time. I had a marvelous time.
Special thanks to Anna Jacob for coming on and talking about Taylor Swift and Swiftageddon and the fandom around it. I think it's so fascinating and very illuminating. And if you want to hear that playlist she mentioned actually as well, I will share that on patreon.com/909. That is our way of showing a bit of extra thanks for with bonus content and playlists and Discord access, where a community of like-minded people are chatting about music and gigs and things that are happening and doing meetups and stuff as well. So definitely a great place if you're looking for a bit of community. Maybe not a Taylor Swift community, but it is a community around the music that we feature mostly on 909. But yeah, very, very fascinating. That's Anna Jacob. If you want more from Anna Jacob and see what she's up to, you can find her on Instagram at AnnaDJ etc. As well as being a DJ for Swiftageddon, she is a DJ as part of a Cabareg and a music project called LOL as well. So you can check her out on Instagram.com/AnnaDJETC and Patreon.com/909 if you want access to her playlist for Swifty Skeptics. So it has got 37 songs on it. That's it from us this week. Andrea will be back with myself next week for more podcast content. In the meantime, 909.com for all your music news and artist needs. And thank you to everyone for listening to our most recent four TED episodes as well. Really appreciate that. If you're around Dublin town this Saturday night, it is the 8th birthday of Lumo Club. Maybe you haven't been down in a while. Maybe you've never been. Maybe you're a regular. It would be great to see you. Lumo is on in Tengu. We play music that is for dancing. So it's disco edits, Italo, electronic, pop music, 80s pop, 90s dance, a bit of everything. Good tunes are the vibe. So lumoclub.eventbrite.com. Also, the Patreon subscribers get free tickets to Lumo every month as well. So that's another reason to sign up. But that is it from us. We will talk to you next week. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.